feel this is their year.
They must be playing defensive. Schmeichel's not coming up for this one. Think he's done enough?
Is this their moment?
Hello and welcome to the United Community Podcast, and we're back. It's going to be a good one today. Manchester United are Carabao Cup champions of the world, double winners, EFL Cup and Bangkok Century Cup, and no one can say that they've done that double before. Great day, plenty to talk about. Of course, we're going to get into United and Newcastle, and you know, such a great day yesterday for United and their fans. We're going to talk about certain individuals within the game yesterday, the importance of Casemiro, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, what a second half he had, and maybe potentially his future at Manchester United. Has he revived himself? The Erik ten Hag era, has it begun? We're also going to talk about Newcastle. And the fact that maybe they're a little bit ahead of schedule in where they would like to be, given the fact that they've only had new owners for less than a year. And maybe we might throw a little debate out there as to whether who might win a title first, United or Newcastle. We're going to do a roundup on some of the games in the Premier League as well. Of course, Spurs beat Chelsea, and we're going to talk about that. Potter is hanging in by the skin of his teeth. And also, are Spurs doing better while Conte is away? Obviously, he's recovering from an operation in Italy. So we'll talk about that as well. Arsenal, another win for them. Are they scraping results or are they just chalking up points? And of course, Liverpool, their struggles continue. How many signings are they potentially going to need to have them back challenging where they want to be? So yeah, plenty to get into, guys. Leave your thoughts and comments in the chat. And if you're listening back, please give us a 5-star review wherever you're listening. But again, we have Ricey on us again. And I've got him on camera this time as well, which is good for anyone watching live. How are you doing, pal?
Well, Jack, how are you? Buzzing? Yeah.
All good. All good. Yeah, really happy now, I have to say. It's been a good 24 hours, you know, so Man United, I suppose. Look, we'll jump straight into it. Man United have won their first piece of silverware in 6 years, nearly seven seasons it's been. And look, watching the game yesterday, were United a better team? I don't think they were for large parts of the game. Again, you know, you're on here as the impartial judge. I'd like to get your opinion on it as well. I thought United were probably the more clinical of the two teams, given the fact that we only had maybe three, probably four big chances and we scored two. But what was your take on the game, looking at it as an outsider, looking in?
Yeah, the game was even enough throughout. Missed the start of the game now just because I was watching the Scottish Cup final, but I caught back up on it today. And I do look, Man United were good for their win. Finals are there to be won, two horse race, anything can happen on a day. We've seen years ago in Cups, Wigan overturning Man City in FA Cup finals. I think Man U were good for their win on the day. They were more clinical, the bigger players stood up like world-class players is thrown around, banded about very easily these days. Player strings together a few good games and he's suddenly talked about as world-class. But one world-class player on that pitch yesterday for sure was Casemiro. Stood up in the biggest moment of them all. I know it's not the biggest cup of them all. It's the first cup you could have won. You took the first cup. Ten Hag has that to his name now. Like, a question I could ask to you is, there was kind of, we were chatting in the pub yesterday after the game, and I just said to the lads, when Man U took in Ten Hag, would they have ever predicted they'd be doing this well so far? Could ye possibly be doing better than ye are realistically? Yeah, you could say, oh, we could be top of the league, but realistically, could Ten Hag be doing any better than he is at the minute?
No, like, it's been an absolutely phenomenal, whatever it's been, seven months.
Man U fans all around, I'd say the country, you can see it all around Kilkenny. a lot of them are back out of woodwork. They can't stop smiling. They're buzzing. They're just like, it's like they were kept in the dark for years and now they're finally getting out to see a bit of light.
It's been so long. But look, I think the reason why Manchester United fans are so happy at the moment, because look, you can take Newcastle, for example. It's 55 years, I think, since they've won a major trophy. So
60s, you know,
we can't be overly dramatic when we're talking about it. But I think the reason why United fans are so happy is the reasoning why it's gone so wrong. And I think the fact that it was so good for so long under Ferguson, all of a sudden it just went to hell in a handbag for 10 years. The owners don't help the situation. And I think you're spot on in what you're saying. The fact that Ten Hag has done such a good job in such a short period of time, we're nearly all caught by surprise going, oh, this is brilliant. Quick, jump on board.
You're kind of waiting for something to collapse or something.
Yeah, you're like, when is this going to end?
You haven't had a clear run of from Christmas now. It's nearly 2 months of a clear run without any controversy. No Ronaldo saga. No, I know you have a bit of Glazers might be leaving and all this, but that's kind of positive news also. There's nothing really there at the minute pulling you back. There was always kind of they might take two steps forward and then one back. Do you know, it would just, something would pull you back into the muck. Someone would be upset.
Yeah.
And just for a second, we'll talk about the resurrection of Wan-Bissaka. The spider, he had a great game. I would be one of his bigger critics. I said from the very start when they signed Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire, I didn't think either was good enough for United. I wouldn't consider Wan-Bissaka world class by any means. He's well able to do a job there. I think one thing that boy has to take credit for is he's never sulked. He's never complained. He's never went to giving out to journalists that he's not starting. He put his nut down, put his head down, and just carried on, waited for his chance, bided his time, got in and played 45 minutes in a cup final, and he was probably your best player on the pitch in the second half. One of them, anyway.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I was saying it in the live watch along yesterday that I was given man of the match to Wan-Bissaka. I was that impressed with him, because Delo hasn't got back to the heights that he was at before his injury. And I still think if you had both players on top of their game, you'd be starting Delo. But I think Wan-Bissaka is the best one-on-one defender in the world. I mean, I can't think of anybody that I would prefer to have in a one-on-one situation. I mean, when he's playing at right back, and we seen yesterday, in the first half, Delo got a bit of a tough time in the first half against St. Maximum. And he's a very good player. He turned him in. He sent him for a bag of chips in the first half, right down on the end line, just went one way and came back the other way. And of course, he picked up a yellow card, so that probably accelerated the fact that Aaron Wan-Bissaka was going to come onto the field. But the second Wan-Bissaka came on in the second half, he put in a tackle on the halfway line on St. Maximum, and instantly that whole right side was locked down for the second half. And Newcastle just changed their point of attack and went to the right-hand side. And it's down to Wan-Bissaka, I have to say. I think he's been phenomenal since he's come in. And I want to ask you, would you keep him in the summer? Given the fact that...
Yeah, well, look, if he's happy to play his big part in the team, I think there could be other areas that you could strengthen first. You don't need to go out and spend 40 million on cover if he's happy there to rotate in between him and Dalo. If he stays, he's probably still going to play 25-odd games next season regardless.
Yeah,
he's not going to be banished to the bench or anything like that, especially if he keeps up this form. When you do break into that top four and you're going for Champions Leagues, FA Cups, you're playing in all the tournaments, the biggest tournaments, you do need two quality players at least for every position. If not, you see all the bigger teams have even more squad depth than that. But yeah, I think it'd be an easy decision to keep him on if he keeps playing on current time. He seems, as I said, a great lad.
Utmost professional.
Yeah, yeah, he probably appreciates what he has where he came from, knows he's on 100 odd grand a week, and he just wants to work for that and strive for that. Like, a lot of people consider, like, when you leave the likes of Liverpool, Manchester United, unless you're going to your Barcelona's or Real Madrid's or maybe Bayern Munich's, you're kind of going down, really.
Yeah.
In stature of clubs. So, he'd be playing Champions League football next season by the look of things as well, you know, so...
Yeah, and I think the one thing I would say about him is, you know, and obviously the obvious suggestion about Wan-Bissaka would be that he needs to improve his game going forward, his link-up play and, you know, maybe his crossing. And but I think he has improved, you know, since Ten Hag has taken over, I would have to say. Again, you don't really know what the future holds for him. Ten Hag might say, you know, I see right back as a, you know, a priority position that we need to upgrade. The one thing I wouldn't want is, like, if you're looking at Delow and Wan-Bissaka as two players that are just not good enough, maybe, you know, which one of them would you keep if you are going to get in, you know, a world-class right full? And would you say, look, this is going to be my right full for the season? Are either one of them going to be happy?
Yeah, well, look, Ten Hag will know that himself by the end of the season. I don't, like, I'm not an avid United fan or anything. I don't know who he would hold on to. I wouldn't fully go to as far as you're saying he's the best 1v1 defender in the world. I don't know who is, so don't ask me that question, but I certainly don't think Wan-Bissaka is. Like,
well, you rewind to that night in Paris, I'd say Mbappe is still getting nightmares about him.
I doubt it, but I wouldn't think Mbappe.
Yeah, well, that was obviously, I wasn't actually being literal there saying that he's still getting nightmares, you fucking idiot. But yeah, even, look, I think
Mbappe be like, Aaron, who?
Well, look, I think, it's a good complaint to have. It really is, you know. I mean, the more players we have that are playing better, the less complaints we have. I want to talk about Casemiro for a minute because, I mean, that man just, he's like a fine wine. He's getting better with age. And I know, obviously, he's only been here a few months, but it just seems like every game he plays, he gets better and better. He puts in better performances. He's upped his goal contributions since he's come to Man United as well. Supposedly, he wasn't renowned for goals. At Real Madrid, I think he's got 5 now for United, but he just gives United that sense of stability, really, doesn't he? I think for me anyway, if I was playing in a team with him, you just know you have that level of comfort when he's playing in front of you if you're a defender.
I know exactly what you mean there. I just sorry, I lost my train of thought there. Sorry.
I'm going to be editing this podcast to death by before
sorry,
I upload it.
Sorry, I was thinking
Spotify.
Something completely different in my head about that final. I was looking at something there on the other screen. I was looking at Bruno Ramirez. Sorry there, Jackie. Do you want to just go again?
Yeah. Does Casemiro give the air? Like, if you're obviously a centre-back and, you know, we've seen... you know, we've seen McTominay and Fred play there over the last few years, but having someone like Casemiro in there who just puts in performance after performance and can dictate the game has to just breed confidence into that United team.
This was kind of a topic of our conversation yesterday as well. Personally, I think that, like, Casemiro has so much to do with this revolution of United. Like, you have to be given a lot of credit to Ten Hag, but, like, Casemiro has come in there. What was he, 60 or 70 million?
Yeah.
Maybe one was pounds, one was euro. I'm not sure. People are saying, oh, he's 30. He was turning 31, I think, a few weeks after he joined United. And people are saying, oh, that's crazy money for him. I put it to you, would you rather a 31-year-old Casemiro in your team for 60, 70 million, or a 25-year-old Declan Rice in your team for 120, 30 million. Like, you're going to get 3, if not 4, good years out of Casemiro.
Yeah.
He'll play there till he's 34, 35. Yeah. And by God, has he done some job in there. And
yeah,
this isn't just sweating over United, praising United. They're doing well at the minute. They deserve a certain amount of praise. But he stood up. Lovely header. Lovely ball in. But so much work to do even for that header. It's different maybe scoring from a corner. They put in a bullet of a corner and you just kind of get onto it and leap and meet it with your head. There was so much direction and everything he had to put on that header yesterday and really led in. Like, he led the charge. He's making tackles. You can even see what it means to him. He's slapping the badge and...
Yeah. He's getting the crowd going.
Yeah, he's just a serial winner. There was a thing there I seen at full time when the ref blew the whistle and they were coming over before they collected their medals. Casemiro was coming over and he hit Bruno kind of on the shoulder and he was pointing out to the pitch somewhere and he was saying, how didn't you pass square that ball? Was your ball? Maybe he should have squared to Sancho. You know, and people are just saying, like, look at this lad, he's just after winning the cup final and he's still finding flaws there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's great to see, and it's the attitude that United have lacked over the last few years, you'd have to say. Paul Pogba to a Casemiro, you know, I mean, it's just night and day.
He's bringing out the best in Fred too.
Yeah.
Fred is, yeah. I won't say he's a changed player. Fred starts in the Brazil squad. He's obviously technically a very good player.
He's 50 maybe, caps, I think.
Yeah, maybe sometimes the English game mightn't suit him the best, but since Casemiro came in, it's like a new confidence in there. They're a partnership together with Brazil, one of the top football sides in the world, and now they seem to be kind of hitting it off very well.
Yeah,
in Manchester.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree with what you were saying there as well about, like, you know, your 31-year-old Casemiro for 4 years, and it there's a similar argument going on at the moment now with United fans about Harry Kane. If he is going to be available in the summer, you know, do you go out and get your Victor Osimhen for 150 million or 120 million, whatever he may be from Napoli, you know, what is he, 24, 25? Or do you go and get a Harry Kane for 70, 80 million?
I'd be taking Harry Kane personally all day. Premier League proven. You can keep him fit. Even if he got 3 seasons out of him, like, then you readdress the situation in 3 years' time or in 2 years' time. You look at Osimhen or whoever, some of these lads that are available or whoever's up and coming then, and have Kane maybe nurture them in. They come in behind Kane for a year. But you've seen it work a treat with Van Persie, albeit, was he only there for 1 year?
No, he was there for two, if not three, maybe, I think. Maybe it was after Fergie left a year.
Fergie was only with him for a year, was he?
That's right. So Ferguson signed him in his last season.
And Van Persie kind of couldn't believe then he was gone. And Moyes screwed over Van Persie kind of then, didn't he?
That's right. I think he played under Moyes, and he played under Van Gaal, I think, for a season as well, maybe.
Maybe, because Moyes was only there for a couple of months. Maybe. I can't confirm that.
Yeah, I think he did. Moyes was there for 7 months, and I think he played for Van Gaal the following season.
Maybe,
and then he left,
but,
I think.
Like, it's, you see, it can be done. Like, I think Harry Kane is a no-brainer. Like, we see John S. has a comment in there, Casemiro's real captain material. He's done everything in football. True leader on the pitch. Very, very, very true comment. But you can also have him on the pitch and have someone like Bruno as your captain, who also kind of leads by example. But Casemiro, whether he's captain or not, is going to do that kind of captain's role. Like, people just look to him. Look, when there's a lad there, he's won 5 Champions Leagues and now a Carabao Cup. I heard a song about that earlier on or something.
Sing it there for us.
I don't know. No. you have to give it to him. As I said, like, there's no way if you had signed Declan Rice last summer for 100-odd million that he'd have made near this impression.
No.
Like,
Absolutely not.
I honestly thought when Casemiro was coming, I thought he might have been coming partially washed, coming for a payday there just to ride it out in the Premier League and see what it's like.
I think that was the big question, you know. But I heard a great story about him that he was watching. It was either the Brighton or the Brentford game that we lost at the start of the season. And we were in talks to sign him, and he texted his agent, and his agent came out and said this. He said he texted his agent and said, tell him I'll fix it.
Yeah.
That was it. You know, so that's the attitude of the man, really. You know what I mean? I want to talk about Ten Hag really quick because, you know, what a great... look, I've heard opposition fans saying in the last 24 hours since we've won, you know, United didn't have the easiest... Or sorry, United had a very easy run to the final. And that's okay. That's, you know, I take that, you know, absolutely. We could have had a tougher run. Obviously, you can only play the teams that are put in front of you. But for Ten Hag to come out now, the first piece of silverware available, and he goes and wins it, it's going to take a lot of pressure off him, I would think, as well. You know, that whole kind of, maybe the media mightn't be on his back as much, you know, where it's Man United, you have to win silverware. But surely the sky's the limit for him. By the looks of things, he looks like the next best manager in the world, if that makes sense. But can he achieve it?
Yeah, he will be a top manager. He just has to do it over more time. He started off very well, just have to keep it up. Like, if you want to be up there with the best managers in the world, you have to do it over a period of time. And look, he has had success at Arsenal or at Ajax. He's come into Man United and he's had a bit of instant success. We've seen Mourinho kind of did similar things. You just need to now progress on this, bring it on. It's a building project. I think they're starting to move up that ladder a bit quicker than they thought. There's nothing far from complete or anything. And a lot of players at United, like, as we were talking about Wan-Bissaka, Wan-Bissaka is only two games, having two stinkers of games away from United going, oh, look, he had a luckily good patch there. He is shite. You know, like, it was only 6 weeks ago you'd be saying that. And then, like, it only takes Fred to have one bad game. You're like, oh, look, Casemiro papered over a few of his cracks. Or Rashford to go 7 or 8 games without a goal. Now, I wouldn't go as much to say you'd never be thinking Rashford is shite because you can see what he can do when he's on fire. Like, he's a very confidence-based player. I'd say Ten Hag is instilling that in a lot of these players. But just, I don't think United, and I don't know if they will, I don't think they should get ahead of themselves yet. They're doing very well. Trophy under their belt takes a bit of pressure off. Main priority now is Champions League football for next year. Finish as high up the table as they can. Keep taking it one game at a time and reassessing 4 or 5 games' time. See where you are in the table. Results go your way, you could be, probably won't be second, but could be knocking up a bit closer.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what I would always say about it is keep plugging away, and if the other two above us shit the bed, then you have to be there ready to pounce.
Yeah.
You know, so just keep getting your 3 points on the board as much as you can.
Well, priority is Champions League. On the other, on the flip side, you can look at it and you can say this is an excellent chance if the other two slip up to try and go on and dare to dream. Because there's no way when the Premier League comes back next year that no way will Liverpool be as poor as they were this year. No way will Chelsea be as poor as they were this year. Yeah. Newcastle are only going to get stronger. Arsenal are in a mix now that they haven't been in years. Man City are just going to buy their way back into being even stronger if they're
allowed.
No, but yeah, if they don't win the Premier League, you know, this year, they'll just go and spend big again in the summer. But like next year's Premier League, Liverpool have to sign in the summer. Chelsea have to stop signing in the summer. Geez, they just have to slow down. Like, there's a different team every week. I don't even know half the players on their team anymore.
I wouldn't even say Graham Potter knows all their first names.
No, I seen a great meme the other day, and it was a picture of Kante, and he was just kind of looking over his shoulder. It was only a picture of him at the training ground, and like there was a bubble coming out of his head, and it was like, where the fuck is Potter? Who was the old manager? He goes, it was a bubble coming out of his head, and he's like, where the fuck is Tuchel? And who the fuck are all these lads? You know, he's been out injured, I think, for months, so they're kind of...
Yeah.
And like, Kante is a player there that I presume Chelsea are going to let go because they've signed so many players. Yeah. He's a player that a top team could get 2 years out of him.
Yeah. We'll get on to Chelsea in a minute, but I want to move it on to Newcastle for a moment because, you know, why we've been talking about him. And you know, they've got to Wembley. I think they've gone 9 games without a win at Wembley. I think it's the longest run in the stadium's history. I don't have anything against Newcastle. You know, they have a huge fan base, and they're a huge club and all of that. But the project, obviously, that they're embarking on now with endless cash behind them, and Eddie Howe is doing what seems to be a very good job there, and he has them, you know, he has them in and around top four. They were fighting relegation last season, and to go from that to top four, not saying that they'll get it, I don't think they will, but surely they're well ahead of schedule and where they want to be.
Yeah, I do agree they are ahead of schedule. They haven't really overspent so far. Yeah, they've signed a few players, but like when you look at the likes of Bruno and that, they've Bruno Gamirez and that, they've all Joe Linton, they've been at the club before these new owners came in. I think the only players did they sign that lad Isaac, was he signed with the new owners?
Yeah.
Forward. And there was another player. Who did they sign last month?
Did they bring in?
I think they made kind of another signing that was made.
And they brought in Nick Pope in the summer as well, didn't
they? Nick Pope. Now, they brought him in. I think they could have brought him in on a free transfer even.
Yeah, they did. Because Burnley got relegated.
No, I'm just trying to see there now. I can't think offhand who they signed. They haven't signed that many people. They brought in Trippier, who I thought was a very stellar signing. They seem to be doing their business right. They're not kind of going for massive names. It'll be nice to see how Eddie Howe gets on in with another transfer window and another pre-season behind him. I do think that from their position now, if they don't secure Europa League, they will be very disappointed with this season. Yeah, they would have had great things to shout about and great getting to the final and all. They had a big day out. They didn't win the final. I think for teams like this, they have to get Europe next season. League Champions League would be the holy grail. But if they didn't get that, Europa League's the next best thing. It'd be the first time in years they've been in Europe. Their fans had travelled very well, I'd imagine. They just have a big buzz back around the club. You get a few bigger names in because you're in Europe. And as I said, you might have your... They're breaking into that top six now. So next year, the likes of your Arsenal's, Tottenham's, Man U's, Chelsea's, Man City's, United's, Liverpool's, there's going to be one of them left out again.
Yeah.
If Newcastle are to continue this project and
year
on year, the likes of Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal, maybe not your Tottenham, or maybe not Arsenal in recent years, but more so now, Man City, Chelsea's, they all want Champions League, but 7 teams can't have 4 slots.
Exactly, and, Eddie. Go on.
Not just the Premier League now is by far the most exciting league in the world. You can see, I don't know how to pronounce his name, that Spanish reporter, Galim Baliger, what's his name?
Oh, on Sky Sports.
Yeah, the.
I can't think of his name. I know the guy you're on about.
Yeah, I can't think of his name anyway. Sorry. I know how to spell it, but not say it. And, he was saying, he goes, the money in the Premier League is just taking over. And Gary Neville or Carragher, maybe it was Carragher.
It was Carragher. I seen the interview. Said, Carragher had a right call back.
Yeah, said Real Madrid and Barcelona have been doing this for years. And he was like, I'm not saying they haven't been doing that, but I'm saying they're losing that power now because more clubs in the Premier League are doing that.
Yeah,
he goes, I'm not saying it's unfair. He's like, I'm not saying it's unfair, but he's just saying something, these leagues will have to do something if they want this to stop. And come back to their league. He goes, now the Premier League for players is the most attractive league in the world.
Yeah. And managers, you would have to say as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and managers, yeah.
I think that's the big reason why this Super League is coming so much into focus the last couple of years and why it's coming back again is your Real Madrid's, your Barcelona's, these are teams that live for European competitions anyway. You know, and... You know, it's always going to be Barcelona or Real Madrid to win the league. You know, you go to Italy, it's to say, although Italy is probably not...
The Italian league is nearly being left out in the cold. That's fallen way behind.
But you can understand then why these teams are looking to sign up for this so-called, Super League that, is going to guarantee revenue and, you know, but
I wouldn't be a fan personally.
No, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. And look, we're fans of the Premier League, you know, more than that. I can't, to be honest with you, I watch La Liga, or I watch I watch El Clasico in La Liga. That's it, you know, and outside of that, yeah, you can understand why the kind of power shift is going towards the Premier League more than that. And
yeah.
But yeah, I think when to bring it back to Newcastle, like you were saying, I think, you know, getting top four, getting into Europe is vital, because if we go back 15 years to when Man City were taken over and all of a sudden they had a lot of money, you know, to get players in the door, you need European competition, and it has to be that stepping stone, you know. And United, thank God, you know, it's looking like we'll get top four. Obviously, it's not guaranteed yet, but to go from not having it, you know, and to get it the first season under Ten Hag, I think is a huge advantage, especially when you're trying to sign these tier one players.
Yeah, Champions League nights back at Old Trafford to be unbelievable for the United fans again.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Who do you think will win a title first, Newcastle or United?
Look, I don't know. I'd be thinking United. I don't necessarily think United are going to win this title within the next 2 years.
Yeah.
But Newcastle is more of a long-term project. I personally think, like, Leicester City went out and won the league. That wasn't even a project to try and win the league. That just kind of happened for them. They did not set out. No way did they set out at the start of the league saying we want to win this league. They got to Christmas and were still top of the league. And I'd say they couldn't believe it. And they were just like, we take this one game at a time. We enjoy this ride as long as we're here. And before they knew it, all the teams below them just kept slipping. And they kept plugging away. It has similarities to Arsenal this year. Sorry, we'll go on to Arsenal there in a minute. Just back to that Newcastle. I don't know. I think I would believe that Manchester United would win the league before Newcastle will.
Yeah, I would think so as well. Especially with Ten Hag, I have to say. Like I have a lot of respect for Eddie Howe. I think he's a very good coach, but I think Ten Hag is on another level. And we're probably in the last 7 months after taking a huge step ahead of Newcastle, even though they're after doing so well.
Eddie Howe is a good coach. To be honest, I didn't realise that Eddie Howe was this good of a coach. Yeah. Eddie Howe was at Bournemouth before, and geez, he made some woeful signings. I don't know if he's great in the transfer market now.
Yeah.
Like, he went off, he signed Jordan Ibe, and who else did he sign? Did he sign someone else? Solanke. Signed them for about 25 million quid each, I think. 25 million quid each. Some crazy signings down there.
Yeah. Right, let's move it on. So we'll move it on to Spurs. Obviously, they played Chelsea on the weekend. Comfortable enough, 2-0 win, you'd have to say. And I want to concentrate on Spurs first and foremost. And obviously, we mentioned in the intro that Conte has been missing now for a few weeks. He had surgery. I can't remember what he had surgery for, but he's back in Italy recovering. And there's been a lot of talk about...
He had gallbladder or something removed. Gallbladder
removed or gallstone, something like that. But there's been a lot of talk. I've been kind of eavesdropping on it about are Spurs playing better with Conte not being there, and how much of an influence does the assistant manager have in relation to picking the team and, you know, being in charge on game days and, you know, working off the cuff decisions. Is it something you would believe, or are you thinking, nah, I mean, look, Conte is...
Nah, well, look, it's two games. There was two big games they won. Two London derbies, both 2-0. One against Spurs, or not, one against West Ham, one against Chelsea. And, two clean sheets, two good victories. I don't think that Chelsea-Spurs match was an unbelievable game yesterday. Chelsea are just so all over the place, but still a big victory. I don't know if I'd read too much into that. You'd have to, I think, go maybe over a course of 6-7 games to really see that. Like, there are two games, there are two good wins, but I don't think it'd be down too much to a change of coach. I personally wouldn't be reading into that too much over two games. As I said, if he was out for another month and they went on a seven games without losing, six or seven wins there,
You'd be kind of
telling Conte, look, take a bit of time off there at home, you know.
You just stay in Italy there and enjoy the sunshine, friend.
Yeah.
But oh. Spurs, what do you make of Spurs? I mean, they are quite hot and cold. You know, they're in fourth at the moment. Do you think they'll get top four?
I don't even want them to get top four, just for the excitement of the Premier League. The teams I want to be seen in the Champions League next year, Spurs are not one of them. They're just, in my opinion, they're a boring team. They tend to get boring managers like that. Just like for players that have such good attackers, they play such defensive football. And when I say good attackers, I mean Son and Kane. Did Mourinho before, just like happy to take 1-0 wins, but couldn't really massively do it with them. I don't think Spurs will get top four, and I hope Spurs don't get top four. And that's not personally against Spurs. I just, what way would you rather
see a Newcastle in the Champions League?
I'd like Liverpool, probably won't be getting into it. I like Liverpool in Champions League. I like United in the Champions League. I'd like to see Arsenal back in the Champions League. City don't really do anything for me. Like, they're a very plastic club. Do you know it's hard to beat Knights when you're watching Champions League football in the likes of Anfield, Old Trafford, years ago in Highbury, but now the Emirates Stadium. I think Arsenal deserve a shot. They've been out of it for quite a while, and even I'd rather see, I wouldn't even care for Chelsea in it now. I'd rather see them in it though than Tottenham or City.
Yeah. I know what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Champions League nights in St. James's Park, Europa League nights in St. James's Park, they have a massive following. They'd be some nights. They would be unbelievable. 50,000. More, 55,000, I think. 55,000 in there. And with these new owners, they'll definitely expand this in years to come, and it'll definitely be brought up to 70,000. And they'll fill it at that. I was over in Newcastle before. As you know, I'm a Sunderland fan, but I was over in Newcastle before, and the city is absolutely football mad. I was in one of them cabs, and I was chatting to the taxi man, and he was just saying, when they were in the Championship and all, he said the year they got relegated, he said you could see the town was depressed. Not obviously properly depressed. You're fully, you know, he said you could see, it was like there was a cloud over it. And as the season went on, as they got better in the Championship, he said, and things started to come back up, he said you could see, the mood was lifting. He said, like, from tea ladies and coffee shops to taxi men to bartenders to builders, they eat, sleep and drink football up there.
Yeah,
like, it's a one club city, they love it.
And what's the connection with Sunderland then? Is there a big gap or is there a big distance between the two of them?
No, I think it's about maybe 15 mile, maybe, right. 20 minutes. That's up in Durham. It's up a bit further, and then you have Middlesbrough in around the area too, and I think Hartlepool is not far off the area as well. But Newcastle are the actual only football team in Newcastle.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's nothing pulling away from them. Yeah. Like, even in Manchester, I know you have the two big Manchester clubs, but then there's a lot of smaller clubs like
Salford,
and in the surrounding area, like, there's a lot of clubs around Manchester. Wigan, Bolton, Blackburn, they're all very close to Manchester. Oldham, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oldham is a big one, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, and look, let's move it over to Chelsea. You know, obviously, it's hard to put your finger... Well, it's not really hard to put your finger on what's going wrong there. You know, they just seem to be all over the place, really. I think they're missing a good striker, I have to say. I mean, that Havertz boils my piss, so he does. I think he's absolutely useless. But then again, you look at it, you have a back line there as well of, you know, Cucurella is there, and, you know, obviously Koulibaly came in, he's over 30. Obviously, Thiago Silva, as class as he is no spring chicken either. I think it's kind of a compounding of mismanagement, buying, maybe, that's put them into the position that they're in.
Yeah. But who's buying the players, do you think?
It has to be the owner. like, there's no way a Potter goes out and says, I need 20 new players. It just doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
No, not in that short space of time. I'd say Potter was, I'd say with half the players coming through, I'd say he's looking them up and going, who the fuck is this lad? Yeah. You know, and looking him up there and going, oh, look, he is 15 assists there over in Ukraine this season. You know, like that Mudryk could turn out to be absolutely pony.
Oh, he has to. When he has a haircut like that, he has to be.
He started off electric, but like, I don't even know how they have squad numbers for all these players. Like, their squad, I would love to see the finances at Chelsea and to see what they're paying out every week. It's like this guy, Todd Boehly. I don't know what his background is or how he made his money, but it's like he's coming in and he's nearly trying to show off and just show what he bought. Like, as you said, the amount of players they bought. Did you mention that player, Cucurella? Is that how you pronounce
Cucurella,
it?
Yeah, 60 million. Like,
60 beans. Yeah, they made him... like, brought him in. I know what's called, was injured now, Chilwell, but I was saying, me and one of my mates, we were watching the Scottish Cup final yesterday and just journeyed, we were chatting just football. And I was watching, I actually had a bet on, I needed, I had result rushes for Spurs, Celtic and United. But sure, two of the games felt they didn't, the opposite teams didn't score. And that's when I was giving out about Hazard. I was like, all the money Chelsea have spent, I was like, and they didn't even think of buying a striker. And they did get a striker in Aubameyang, and oh, he's played less than 10 games, I'd say.
Oh,
absolute shit show. I detest him. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barcelona sold him. Barcelona took him for free off Arsenal. Then they sell him to Chelsea for 12 million. And then in January, they were supposedly said to Chelsea, we'll take him back off your hands if you want, but we're taking him for nothing. You know, like
the cheeky, Barcelona absolute cowboys, by.
Oh, but I don't know if they're cowboys. I'd say they're absolute geniuses. They're after slashing. They're slashed. I was reading a thing the other day from their president, and he said they're after slashing their wage bill and slashing their debt, while in the meantime making their team twice as strong for only 70 million with players going in and out. They paid 70 million is all. Like, Lewandowski's been a great signing for them.
Yeah, but see, look at what they've done with De Jong. They basically told De Jong, we don't want you. You're too expensive. And then they convinced him to half his wages and then convinced him that we're not back paying you for the wages we owe you for the original deal that we said we'd give you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're a prick of a club. They're like them and Real Madrid. Like, they don't look after their legends, or they don't look after, you know, anything in the club like that. You see, like, the way they treat some players that leave, it's crazy. Like, I think they all turned on Piqué, or a lot of them turned on Piqué. He was at the club, sure, he's won everything. Like, if you're ever going to have a legend at a club, you'd have to say it's him. I know you have your Messi, Xavi's, Iniesta's, Puyol's, all these two. There's a lot of legends at Barcelona, but he was there through thick and thin for him, through it all. Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. But it's kind of that whole kind of waving the white flag, you know. And I've seen interviews, you know, about Barcelona from the likes of Xavi. And
what's waving the white flag?
Waving the white flag means you're not good enough. Get out, you know.
Is that what the fans do, is it?
That's what the fans do in the ground, yeah. And I think it's more of a Spanish thing. It might not just be a Barcelona thing, but they done it to Xavi when he was younger. You know, he commanded the scene, had some good games, and then went through a spell of being really poor, and the white flags were out for him. So, they don't take any prisoners over there, so they don't. I want to move it on to Arsenal really quick. Obviously, they had a good 1-0 win on the weekend. That's two wins in a row for him now in the league, and yeah, are they scraping results now? Again, look, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but these are things that I'm reading and I'm listening to, you know, watching other channels and things like that. But
yeah,
you know,
other United channels.
No, they're not United channels. You know my stance on Arsenal. I don't want them winning the league, but they're showing some good resilience. In fairness to them.
Yeah, they are. And look, you can look at the glasses half full or the glasses half empty. You can look at it and say they're scraping by in results, or you can look at them and say they're doing what champions do and winning by any means necessary and finding a way to win when a win doesn't look likely. Like, I know you kind of made it out there to be the great escape and they won 4-2 against Leicester, or 4-2 last week against Villa, was it? Sorry.
Yeah.
But look, you know, you'd have to believe if it was United, you would be saying there is a certain amount of luck involved, but you dug and dug and dug and it got into the 98th minute and you were still level, and then it finished up in the 98th minute and you had scored two more goals. So you have to admire the moxie there. You have to admire, like, the will to grind out results as well as just having luck involved. Like, every time anybody wins a league, there's a bit of luck involved at some point throughout the season. But look, at the end of the season, either way, and your father always said this, like, lucky teams don't win league. Good teams win leagues. What do you say? Good teams win cups. Great teams.
Good teams win the league. Lucky teams win the cup.
Great teams win both.
Great teams win both. Yeah.
If you're top of a 38 game season, at the end of the season, you're there because you 100% deserve it, not because of luck, not because anything else. Over 38 games, you were the most consistent team. You were the best team. I do believe Arsenal can, and I'd go as far to say as will, go on and win the Premier League this season.
Big call out of David Rice.
I think I'd like to see him win it. Just, I think it'd be very good for the Premier League if they were to win it. Like, if Man United came back somehow and won it, look, a lot of people's head would be wrecked, because the arrogant United fans would be actually back with one of the biggest trophies they could claim. But it would be great for the Premier League too. Like, the worst thing that could happen for the Premier League is Man City, and it's not even a bad thing to happen, but the most boring thing that would happen is Man City go and win the Premier League again.
Yeah,
like, I don't mean any badness on Man City, but if you look back at players like Vincent Kompany, one of the best centre halves the Premier League even ever seen. But if he had that career for Liverpool or Manchester United, his career instantly seems and sounds better than it is, seen as now. I don't know, what did he win with Man City? Maybe for argument's sake, say he won 4 or 5 leagues and 3 or 4 FA Cups. He won 12 trophies there. That's great and all, doing it at City. And people kind of take away from a bit of that because it's all this chic money, oil money. Like, he'd be seen, I think, as a better player and a more of a Premier League legend if he'd done that either for Manchester United or Liverpool. Because I think they're the two biggest clubs. Arsenal now. Arsenal can be up there. I read a stat about Arsenal the other day. They have the most wins ever. They have the most points ever accumulated in the top division in England. Not only the Premier League since 1992.
First division.
Yeah, ever. Their highest. I think Manchester United are third, with Liverpool second.
Yeah.
And Man City are fifth.
Are they?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Now, this isn't only a Premier League one. A Premier League one since 92 would look very different.
Yeah, like, you're probably going back to the days.
Now, I only seen this on TikTok. I was flicking through TikTok and it came up.
You're probably going back to them days as well, though, which probably makes it a better achievement for the likes of Arsenal.
You're going back to
the days in, say, the 70s and 80s and before that, where you only got 2 points for a league win, not three.
Yeah. But, like, obviously, the longer it goes on shows the more longevity that they have, the likes of them have been in the Premier League. Would I be right in saying that Everton have never been relegated?
No, never. Out of Never. Premier League, I don't think.
Is it just the Premier League?
Or have
League,
they been it? In the top flight? There is a stat there that Everton are one of the, it's either the only, they're one of the teams never to be relegated, or they're one of the longest standing teams without relegation out of the top flight. I don't think they've never been relegated out of the Premier League, I'm certain.
Yeah, but so many teams, you wouldn't, Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal, none of these have been relegated out of the Premier League.
Yeah. Anyway, talking about relegation, let's move it on to Liverpool. Liverpool, obviously, I mean, where's it going wrong for Liverpool at the moment? They've dropped another 2 points to Crystal Palace, you know, and on the back of a really humbling 5-2 defeat in the Champions League, where basically Real Madrid ripped them to shreds. And
they did the first 20 minutes. I was thinking, not our Liverpool back, but I was like, this could be a good turning point for their season. This is a time now, end of February, beginning of March now, they could kick on here and top four as well within their grasp if they knock a few 6 or 7 wins together in a row there.
Look,
they just fell to pieces. What's the midfielder's name? Barrett Bajetic, or I'm not sure of his name.
Yeah, I can't pronounce it either, to be honest with you.
Seems to be flying at a couple of my mates that are Liverpool fans, saying that he's the best midfielder at the club in the minute. I don't know, like, they looked so flat. Like, Salah just doesn't have that spark. I'm not saying he's not the player he was, because when Liverpool were flying it there during the 2021 season and playing some of the nicest football that the Premier League has ever seen, it was that season they had some of the nicest football the Premier League ever seen, in my opinion. They were just on absolute fire. I think they've been very unlucky with injuries this year, but it can't all be down to luck to unluckiness. Klopp will have to take a bit of flack. The players can't seem to get motivated. They did have a few big players missing. They did go out and the club backed them to a certain extent. They backed them, they bought a good bit of firepower. Has it clicked up top? It's hard to say. You wouldn't say massively, but like, the players have shown flashes of brilliance. Like,
yeah,
that goal that Nunes scored last week was a fantastic goal. Yeah. And he has the skill and he has the pace. He looks a bit clumsy and he looks a bit like, you know, he just looks a bit clumsy up there, but can take people time to settle in. He is only 23.
Mm.
He's not on any par. Like, he's not on any level par with the likes of Mbappe or any of these that are only 23. You know, he's a few grades lower, but he's still, you'd want to see him become a world-class player for that kind of money. Liverpool, I think they could go a long way to coming back to a very good side with a couple of decent midfielders signed in there. They have
How many players do you think they need to sign to get them back to challenging?
If you just go through it, they have a goalie, they have a right full, they have a left full that don't need replacing, in my opinion. Now, you might need to get backups in there. Their left full backup, Tsimikas, should be doing the job.
I've been hearing a lot of Liverpool fans saying that
Trent now, I did hear that.
Would never be in the defence ever again.
I did hear that lately now. So, look, maybe they need to be looking at a right full there too, depending on what formation they're going with. If they're playing the three across the middle, Fabinho was very poor, very, very poor against Barcelona, I thought, anyway. And Real Madrid, apologies there. Van Dijk is good, but like, you can see some this year, some of his stats that were, he was held in such high regard over, like the stats that he's never been dribbled past, never been this and that. He's losing a good few of these stats. It's just getting older with age, and it's also, your team isn't as strong. Like, Jota, when they signed him from Wolves, he was a fantastic signing that he took to Liverpool like a duck to water. He took to him a lot better than I thought he ever would.
Yeah.
He gets injured. Luis Diaz comes there last year. He brings electricity to the team. Do you know, he has a bit of that kind of razzmatazz around him, gets the crowd going and all. He was unlucky with injuries there. Gakpo, I don't know what to make of that signing, to be honest. He had a decent World Cup. Like, some of the players that come from that Dutch league, especially attackers, a lot of them find it very hard to settle in England, and definitely not quickly anyway. But I don't know where they really want him to play. Salah looks so flat. He just has no... He's definitely not lost any of his footballing ability or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just like, maybe he's lost a bit of that want.
Do you know what I think? He needs... Right, if we're looking at Liverpool, I think they need a right back. They need two centre backs, because not to say that Van Dijk is. I'm still saying Van Dijk in there, but you need three good enough centre backs.
Yeah, but good enough? That's there.
I don't think the other two are good enough. Gomez, Matip. And Matip. I don't think either.
What about the other fella, the French boy?
Oh, the French fella.
They don't need two centre backs.
He's
anyway.
Injured, is he? Sorry, I forgot about him.
Yeah, if they got one more centre back, I'd be getting rid of Joe Gomez anyway. I wouldn't. Yeah. I'd be getting rid of him out of the club. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
You'll sell Joe Gomez there now to Everton or their rivals, so you won't get him. Joe Gomez there now. Send him out to Villa or something like that.
Yeah. But I think they need two central midfielders minimum.
Yeah, what kind now? Like a CDM there.
They need a CDM and they need
Savino isn't that old.
I know he's not, but he's not that good either.
Do you think that? No. You think he's not that good? Like, these players can't turn bad overnight. Last season he was being considered like world class. You can't have a viewpoint on that. I do agree they definitely need two, if not three midfielders, if they're going to be playing. If they're going to be playing three in the middle, week in, week out, they need three new midfielders. Start every week, but just...
Yeah, and if I was saying signing two midfielders, I'm not saying to sell Fabinho, you know what I mean? If you bring in competition, it's going to put the spark up a lot. Like, we've seen it with United, we've seen it with Luke Shaw this year. We bring in Malacia, all of a sudden, you know, 6 weeks later, Luke Shaw's the best left full in the world.
I know,
you
know, and Malacia, I don't think it's that great. At the minute he comes in, does a job, the world, and he's only young and get better, but he only costs you 12 mil or something I think 12 mil, but in nowadays that's not too much.
Yeah, and I think something similar, you know, with Liverpool, with Mo Salah, I think is needed, where a right winger is needed to challenge him, because, you know, not saying that he's not good enough to get in the team, but again, something similar there.
I know, but I just think with Liverpool, they're after buying so many attackers now. I 100% do not think... Well, not so many. They bought their two. They bought probably four new attackers in the last 2 years. But I do not think that's a priority now. Like, if you're saying this about Trent, it's probably... Like, Trent is a fantastic player. They'll just have to find another position for him. Maybe he could take up that CDM or one of them. Maybe he could take up a box-to-box midfielder position there. Maybe they could look at that. Like, he's a Liverpool boy, he's scouts, he wants, like, obviously loves the club and has no intention of leaving, and I wouldn't imagine the club has any intention of selling him, but maybe a positional change might be the best thing for his career at the minute. See how it works out. I don't know if they will get the money to spend though.
No, I don't think they will.
How would they get the money to spend now, and they weren't given the money to spend when they were on top?
Yeah, I think some investment is going to be need to brought in. Like, their owners have said that they're looking for investment. You know what I mean? So, just a really quick one. How are Sunderland getting on before we finish?
Sunderland are doing all right. I think they're 8 in the Championship. Sunderland, they're after losing their last two games, though. They lost to Coventry the other day. A few of the lads, Pike and... couple of lads that play football went over to visit Shawnee Maguire, or over to watch him play over there, and they went actually last Saturday and watched the Sunderland match. The Coventry bet Sunderland 2-1. That was kind of a big game. It was a game that would have pulled Sunderland 7 points ahead of Coventry, but now it brought Coventry to a point behind Sunderland. Sunderland are kind of overshooting this year anyway. Like, they came up from the Championship last year. They have a good few players on loan.
Yeah, our young lad, the Allod there, sure.
He's doing very well. But Pike, Emmett Nugent said to me, he goes, when you're looking at the Sunderland team, he's like, they have like four attackers in the team, and they're all nearly the exact same. Said very similar to the Allod. Small, tricky, fast players. But they have no one up top to hold up the ball. They have a striker, Ross Stewart, who they bought for 10 million, or big money anyway, for a Championship club. He had 14, 15 goals bagged this season, but he's after getting injured there, and he's out for a couple of months. So they're feeling the pinch on that. But they'd be happy. Obviously, when you're 7th and 8th, you're looking at them playoff spots.
Yeah,
but Sunderland now to be finishing top 10 will be very happy with this season.
Yeah.
Especially after playing 3 years down in League One.
Yeah, absolutely.
Still getting 35,000 at a game.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, we'll leave it there. Ricey, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, sound Jack, no problem.
Hopefully we'll see you again next week.
Thanks to
everyone who's listened as well, guys. If you're watching live on YouTube, listen to the channel, listen back to Spotify or Apple Podcasts. a 5-star review. We'll be back next week. Obviously, myself, I'll be on United Community Channel on YouTube on Wednesday night. We've got the watch along against West Ham, so come over and check it out. And of course, we've got a massive game with Liverpool on the weekend as well. So I'll be doing watch alongs for both of them, guys. But yeah, thanks for listening. See you down the road.